Support for Central Florida Public Media comes from Addition Financial, offering their Savings Plus account with a 4% annual percentage yield. Serving Central Floridians since 1937 and was recently named one of Newsweek's best regional credit unions. More at additionfi.com/NPR. Applicable on savings up to $5,000. Rate subject to change, federally insured by NCUA.
Exploring the women who reached for the stars. You're listening to Are We There Yet? The radio show exploring space exploration. Hi, I'm Marion Summerall, in for Brendan Byrne. It's Women's History Month, and Are We There Yet? Is exploring the women that made history in space. Retired NASA astronaut Wendy Lawrence was selected into the astronaut program in 1992. After watching Neil Armstrong land on the moon, she spent 25 years making her dreams come true. We'll speak with Wendy about her journey into orbit. Then, the journey for American women to become space explorers wasn't easy. Women didn't fly to space until the 80s. We'll speak with the University of Central Florida space historian Amy Foster about these women and the fight to reach orbit. That's ahead on Are We There Yet? Sitting in front of the TV as a child, Wendy Lawrence watched the Apollo moon missions, Inspired, which sparked her 25-year journey that included a Navy captain, helicopter pilot, and in 1992, being selected by NASA to trek into space. Lawrence has logged 51 days, 3 hours, and 56 minutes in space. As a retired NASA astronaut, she spends some of her time inspiring others through the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex's Astronaut Encounter Program. I met with veteran astronaut Wendy Lawrence at one of those outreach events here in Florida. Wendy, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Great to be a part of it.
So tell me where we are and what you're doing here today.
I am here as part of the Astronaut Encounter Program. So this is the Kennedy Space Center Visitors Complex. And technically, those of us who participate in this program are former NASA astronauts, but for the most part, the guests don't recognize that. They just view us as somebody who worked at NASA. And so this gives us an opportunity to share our experiences as an astronaut in particular, what it was like to fly in space. So hopefully it's a little bit of making that experience something that the guests can better connect with.
Let's talk a little bit about your journey to becoming an astronaut. You were also a Navy captain and a helicopter pilot. So tell me a little bit about this journey to your career and where you are today.
Well, I wish I had a more unique astronaut story. Sometimes I guess I feel bad about it when I really shouldn't. For a lot of astronauts around my age, we grew up during the Apollo program. What an incredibly exciting time here in the United States. So we all have our stories about being in front of our televisions at home. For me, it was Apollo 11, July 1969. I just turned 10. And my mother made sure that my older brother and my sister and myself were in front of our, I'm pretty sure, still black and white television. You know, to this day, I can't put it into words. I don't know what it was about watching Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin do something that had never been done before, but I couldn't take the eyes off the screen. And I thought, yeah, I want to be an astronaut. How do I make that come true? I didn't think about that as a 10-year-old, but here I am later years of high school. I'm like, I still very much want to do this. My dad, fortunately, had known several of the early astronauts, and he said, well, take a look at what they did after high school in particular, and see if you can follow in their footsteps. Well, many had gone into the military to learn how to fly. My senior year of high school was the first year that women were allowed to attend service academies. So my mother's father went to the Naval Academy, as did my dad, so I kind of went with the family tradition, headed off to the Naval Academy, studied engineering. Like my grandfather and father, I became a pilot, although I chose to fly helicopters because I love the versatility of them. And then it was kind of a one step after the other. As a helicopter pilot, I realized I eventually want to apply to NASA to be an astronaut in the shuttle program. I really need to go off and get a master's degree, which the Navy offered to send me to MIT to get my master's in ocean engineering. So after my first flying tour, I did that. I went back and flew some more, and eventually, after being in the Navy for about 11 years, I thought maybe I might have a competitive application. So to be an astronaut is like any other job. You got to apply. You got to let NASA know that you're interested. So I filled out my application and I got selected.
What year did you get selected?
So I was informed by NASA in March of 1992 that they were interested in having me come down to the Johnson Space Center that August to be in the next group of astronaut candidates.
And how was that feeling? You know, you've been flying, but now this is a different type of flying. You're flying a big ways away from Earth. You know, how was that feeling?
Talk about flying higher and faster. The training flow for me was very similar to the training I had done to become a Navy pilot, flight training I did in Pensacola. I'd learned to fly a variety of helicopters, and so there's always a process you go through to learn the new aircraft that you're going to fly on. So that's a process that we pretty much did as astronaut candidates. All right, I got to go to class. Somebody's going to teach me about how this particular system operates, and then I'm going to go spend time in a simulator to practice the procedures. And then eventually I'm going to integrate all the systems together in a very sophisticated simulator. I'm going to practice. So for me, it was a very comfortable environment. I felt like I have done this before. However, Space Shuttle was orders of magnitude more complicated than any helicopter I flew on. So the amount of time it took to really feel like you thoroughly understood the systems on board was a much greater period of time than it did for me to master my helicopters.
Kind of looking at Women's History Month, what was it like to kind of see and be a part of this new wave?
And it's interesting. People have asked me, you know, okay, you're 10 years old. You see these men flying in space. Why did you think you could be a part of it? You didn't see anybody who looked like you doing it. You got to remember, you know, this is happening in the mid to late 60s. At the same time that there's this very popular television show called Star Trek. I watched every episode of the original Star Trek with my brother, older brother, and I saw people who looked like me. Lieutenant Uhura was like, hey, there are women flying in space, so it didn't even cross my mind. Yes, women got selected to be in the first shuttle astronaut class in 1978, but that was while I was at the Naval Academy, and I just didn't have extra brain cells to think about that. I guess I never really stopped to think about, as a woman, this is going to be something that's going to not be something I'm a part of. Not to say that I wasn't aware of it. Being in the second class of women in the Naval Academy, I still was very much aware of the fact that we had to push hard to knock down the barriers. But when I got to NASA, it was completely different than the Navy. August of 1992, there were probably 100 active astronauts. Well over 30 were women. So it didn't even cross my mind that, oh, you might be the minority. I look around and like, there are women everywhere. This is great. And I think really the mindset was, we're just here. We want to do the best job that we can possibly do. I don't think we necessarily spent time thinking about perhaps the impact that we were making. We really just wanted to be focused. We were focusing on being the best astronauts that we could possibly be.
So you do this training and you finally make it up to space. What was it like, you know, looking back down and on the Earth from a whole new perspective? You know, what was that first flight like for you?
Pretty exciting, because I had been waiting 25 years to make that dream come true. And, you know, that's a long time. So I think for every person who's doing their first space flight, there is a tremendous sense of excitement, anticipation. You've been training a long period of time. You finally want to experience it for real. And it does not disappoint. The rocket ride was incredible. First view out the window is a pretty emotional moment. For me in particular, it was 25 years, but I finally did it. I'm up here now and I'm living my dream, and this is so much better than I thought it was going to be. Again, all that hard work, all the ups and downs, all those periods of doubt, it's all been worth it.
And was there somebody who inspired you, you know, during that time when through the training and then getting up there, or somebody today who inspires you?
You know, I wish I could really point to one individual. But for me, I think there were a lot of people who, you know, kind of popped in at the right moment to provide, you know, that shot in the arm, so to speak, you know, to be encouraging. You know, certainly you got to look at the Apollo 11 crew and thank them for what they did, the history that they made. They inspired a lot of us to want to follow in their footsteps. And then, you know, I think each and every one of us can point to teachers that we had, coaches, family friends. You know, Fred Gregory talks about the Tuskegee Airmen that his dad knew, that he got a chance to meet. So there are many people who just kind of pop into your life that have an impact for, you know, even a brief moment that you can look back and say, you know, what I needed at the point in time. So thanks very much for being willing to come alongside for a moment and help out, be supportive.
And is it interesting to think that you're a role model for a lot of people? And even here today, you know, people are coming to hear your story and speak with you. Is that, how does that make you feel too?
I have to say, for me personally, that's one of the really rewarding things about coming down here and participating in Astronaut Encounter, because every time you're here, you see those kids that are dressed in the flight suits and they have the same dream. And you realize, yeah, I am here to nurture that dream, to encourage it, you know, to put a little water on the seeds. And you also realize I'm a person that can now stand in front of them, somebody they can see with their own eyes, who can, that they then can realize, I want to do what this person did. This person was able to make it happen. And what I want these kids to realize is, you have a shot at this too. So if I can be a source of encouragement for you, just by the fact that you're here and you get a chance to talk to me briefly, then that's awesome. I love it.
And I love that, especially, you know, I feel like I need to get myself a little suit the next time I come here. But I also wanted to ask, with it being Women's History Month, for all those women and young women out there who maybe are considering a path in STEM, maybe are considering being an astronaut, you talked about giving that message to the kids who come here today. Is there something that you would tell maybe somebody who is curious in taking that next step and exploring more into STEM and NASA and just space in general?
Take it. You know, if you think you have an interest, then go find out. Take those steps. See if that's something that you really enjoy. Don't decide beforehand that it's not going to be for you. You need to have the courage to take those steps. And even if it's hard initially, don't necessarily give up. I mean, most things that we do in life are not comfortable at first. I mean, think about learning how to speak another language or play a musical instrument or play a sport. We're not good at that initially. We have to practice to get better. And that's similar to your academics or similar to, you know, pursuing an idea of what you want to do. There are going to be periods of time where it's not easy, but that doesn't mean you just give up. You really owe it to yourself to try. You have no idea how that journey is going to play out until you start to take the steps.
I'm also feeling inspired by those words. I really am. Well, Wendy, thank you so much for coming on the show today, and I look forward to hearing more from you.
Thank you. Again, thanks for the opportunity to be part of this.
That was veteran NASA astronaut Wendy Lawrence. Still to come, the historical fight for American women to be astronauts. That's ahead on Are We There Yet?
You're listening to Are We There Yet? I'm Marion Summerall, in for Brennan Byrne. Wendy Lawrence made her first trip to space in 1995. More than a decade after the first American woman, Sally Ride, made her historic flight on the space shuttle. The effort to get women in the astronaut corps started even earlier than that. University of Central Florida space historian Amy Foster focuses on technology and gender and has chronicled the story of women astronauts. I spoke with Foster about this history and how women pushed gender boundaries in the astronaut corps.
So in the 1960s, NASA was really caught in the space race with the Soviet Union. So the opportunities for women were really limited at that point. President Eisenhower had said he wanted test pilots to be the first astronaut, so part of the Mercury program. That ends up being the case largely through the 1960s, that you had to be a test pilot. And women were not allowed. They were not allowed in test pilot school. They were not allowed to fly jets. And that was kind of one of the other things, is being a pilot as well as being a test pilot. And so the opportunities for women to even compete for those early slots at NASA simply didn't exist because the qualifications had removed them from eligibility. But what really changes is as the space race comes to an end, largely with Apollo 11 in 1969, that meant NASA was recreating kind of the vision for themselves. And it's going back to that foundation in science and exploration. But also that means developing a new vehicle. And that was the space shuttle. And the space shuttle was really meant to be, in many ways, a vehicle to get us back and forth to low Earth orbit. Initially, the plan was to have a space station as well, where that low Earth orbit science could be conducted. And the shuttle would transport astronauts back and forth to the space station. The funding wasn't there for the space station. The funding was there for the shuttle. So the shuttle became that laboratory in space. So when women entered the program in 1978, this was the first time that the opportunity for women to become astronauts was really opened up to science, which is what NASA was ultimately founded on. And when that mission changes, that opens the door for women to become astronauts because the scientists were more important. So for women who were getting opportunities in STEM education, this now became an opportunity for women to become astronauts because they had that training. And when you look at those first six women, they're all highly motivated, highly educated, and they all either have a PhD or an MD, you know. Again, highly successful women. But the other thing that's kind of important is for women to be chosen as astronauts, they have to have access to what I refer to as those pipeline careers. You have to be able to get an education, a college education, and an advanced degree in some of the sciences or engineering. By the time we get to the 70s, more women have had that opportunity, that those levels of education, and are now eligible to fly on the space shuttle, which is new in the 1970s. And so as the mission at NASA changes from that Cold War mentality in the space race, now it becomes something more about science, which is not deemed as high risk as the space race was. And so this really opened up opportunities. As long as the astronauts now who were trained in the sciences, that they are now eligible. And that's really where those first six women who were selected by NASA came from. They came out of the sciences. We call it Group 8. There was the eighth class of astronauts who were selected in 1978. And the classifications were changing. So initially, you came in kind of as an astronaut. Just as an astronaut, you were a pilot. NASA had actually selected some scientists, astronauts before, with the idea of them being part of the exploration of the moon. But they still had to be pilots. And that was changing with the shuttle. So the women who were coming into NASA in 1978 were part of a group of astronauts called mission specialists. And they were meant to be the workhorses of the program. Since the shuttle was about science, it was the scientists who were important. The creation of the mission specialist possibility really changed access for women in a way that didn't exist through kind of that old program.
You see that change back then, and now we're about to see a lot of stuff with going to the moon in these next couple of years with women in space. What changed really with the mentality of back then with the space shuttle to now?
There is a more open attitude towards anybody can do whatever they want. You know, once those first six women were brought into the space program, brought in as astronauts, that opens the door. Getting the door open for the first time is key. You know, it's, 1978. It's over 45 years ago now. And so opportunities for women have expanded significantly since then. But I think one of the things that you have to look at when you look at the astronaut corps at NASA is it really does represent kind of those larger fields generally. So, you know, you can still be a pilot and become an astronaut, but those mission specialists, the scientists, the engineers, the physicians, those are still highly selected by NASA. as long as women are in those pipeline careers, and as those numbers change, when they're more represented in STEM, then that's going to be reflected in the astronaut corps. So even though we kind of look at NASA as this pinnacle in many ways, I mean, it's very hard to become an astronaut. Very few were selected. And so it is that elite field. But as long as women and people of color have opportunities on the ground and attitudes are shaping about what they can do, but also what they should do, then, you know, what happens at NASA is very much kind of a taking of the pulse of society. When women wanted to be a part of the space program in the 1960s, the attitudes were very close-minded. You know, women should not be doing this. And, you know, I've looked at op-eds from that period, and you have as many women as men in the 1960s saying women should not be astronauts. It is not their place. You know, since the 1960s, not only have we seen attitudes change about people of color, but also about women. It's still about fighting the fight. You know, equality is important.
Why is it so important for NASA to have gender diversity and diversity in general in space?
Being able to see people who look like you in those jobs that you imagine for yourself, it creates a sense of awareness that this is possible. It helps define a path forward. You know, as long as the hardest thing is being the first at anything, and you run up against a lot of roadblocks that are both realistic and entirely unrealistic. And so being the first is so hard. But as long as there are others who have done it, that opens the door a little bit wider. It's also inspiring. You know, when you talk to people at NASA, and not just the astronauts, but the scientists and the engineers, and this is true across the sciences, they talk about things they saw or read in science fiction, and they are trying to make it science fact. If you have a mentor, or at least just somebody who is visually represented that's like you, doing those things, it makes all the difference. When we go back and kind of look at science fiction, the role that Nichelle Nichols played in Star Trek as Lieutenant Uhura, she was a woman and she was Black. And there was a point where she wanted to step away from the show. And Martin Luther King Jr. said, "You can't. You are important just by being there." And, you know, in reality, we kind of look at her role. She was a communications officer. At some level, she sort of answered the phone, which is, you know, diminishing. Yet she was part of the command of that spacecraft, you know, of the Enterprise. And just being there was important because it gave people of color and girls hope for change. And you can't put a dollar value on that.
What made you so interested in studying space like this? Just as a personal note, why do you do it for yourself? I mean, whether it's studying topics like this or covering more into the shuttle, or, you know, what makes you do it as well?
I mean, to be completely honest, I wanted to be an astronaut growing up. You know, I think many kids kind of go through that phase. I was still there when I graduated from high school, and I came of age with these women. They were my heroes. And I think in terms of representation, yes, I was seeing women, you know, who were going to fly on the space shuttle. And it's just kind of one of those special connections I have. Sally Ride's first flight launched on June 18th, 1983, and that happened to be my 12th birthday. So it was significant for me. And, you know, as a kid, I was not the one who had pictures of bands on my bedroom wall. I had newspaper articles with these first six women for every time they flew, you know, that made a headline, and you'd get a picture in the paper, and that's what I cut out and put on my bedroom wall. So I actually ended up getting my undergraduate degree in aeronautical and astronautical engineering. By the time I finished that degree, I knew I didn't want to be an engineer. So it was kind of finding my place and discovered the history of technology. And so now I actually teach the history of the U.S. space program, and I've talked to some of those first women astronauts. They're still my heroes, and now I can call a couple of them friends. And so for me, being able to tell their story is at some level coming full circle.
with that, how do you feel about teaching, you know, that next student who walks into that classroom and maybe doesn't know all about, you know, that history of just the space program in general? You know, how does that feel to kind of pass along that history and the history of these heroes that you're talking about too?
I mean, being able to teach about the shuttle program generally, I mean, that's kind of my area of research because I focus so much on kind of the women's story. And they, you know, only entered the space program when the space shuttle was being developed. For me, it's lots of fun, but I also teach a course on women in science. And I think when you teach history, it's important to cover kind of those celebratory moments, but also the struggle. You know, and for women in science, it's been a long struggle. Women were starting to get college educations in the sciences in the 19th century, but, you know, their first opportunities were at women's colleges, not in, you know, the elite colleges that we think of now as where you would want to go. But I think understanding that path is as important as celebrating those moments. I mean, I do enjoy celebrating those women, their contributions, even just to science, some of the work that they did when they were on the shuttle. And Shana Lucid was on Mir for 6 months. So the Russian space station and the work that they do in trying to understand what the future of space flight will mean for humans is valuable. And I don't want to play that down at all. And so I enjoy celebrating them. But I think we have to understand the struggles that we've been through, not only to appreciate where we are now, but to realize there are still things we must address moving forward. It's important to remember where we've been. But one of the things that I actually really love about history is it's messy. You know, coming from engineering where generally, there is an answer, a single answer. History is not that way. And I always tell my students, particularly like my lower division courses, you know, you're not going to find better drama on TV. I mean, history is drama because it's people with emotions, good and bad. And it is fascinating because it's messy. And those make for great stories, but they also can be incredibly inspirational, even the difficult moments. Maybe even particularly the difficult moments. I feel like our job as human beings is just to be good. And knowing where the struggles are, I think makes us more empathetic. And if we were a more empathetic world, it would be a better place.
That was University of Central Florida's space historian, Amy Foster, who focuses on technology and gender. That's going to do it for this week's show. If you're not already, be sure to subscribe to the show's podcast feed so you never miss an episode. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. We've got more space coverage online. Visit wmfe.org/space. Are We There Yet? Is a production of 90.7 WMFB News. Our host is Brennan Byrne. Our producer is me, Marion Summerall. Our intern is Emily Ching. Editorial guidance from Latoya Dennis. Support for Are We There Yet? Comes from our listeners. Until next week, I'm Marion Summerall. Thanks for listening.